On today's Next Fan Up podcast, you're going to hear this.
Bierman's an interesting name. My problem with him is that the Bears already...
Because it has beer in it.
You'll also hear this.
Oh, great. Tell him he checks in the post.
Do I have another one? Yeah, here, try this.
I'm not trying to get your Darth Vader-themed tighty-whities in a twist.
Let's get this show started right now.
Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next Fan Up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
They are who we thought they were.
You know, the more and more I think about that Mike Singletary cut about we want winners, wouldn't it have been better if he had said, I want losers? I want people who want to know how to lose. I don't know. Maybe it's just me. Hey, everybody. It's Pod Vader thinking irrational thoughts once again, joining you on another edition of Next Fan Up, featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans. And today we are chock full of Superfans. We've got more Superfans than we know what we could do with. But I'm very happy because a couple of these guys I haven't talked to in a while. And one of these guys in particular, who I'll start with, I've never spoken to at all. So I'd like to welcome our newest Bills Superfan, that being Robert. Hello, Robert.
Hello, Pod Vader.
How are things in Buffalo land?
Mediocre as usual. This is our favorite time of the year, the off season. The only time we have any hope, usually by week three, the New England Patriots have crushed it out of us. So we like this time of year. We think we can make the playoffs at this time of year.
Well, I'll do my best to crush your hope before we even get to week three. And I'll be joined by Patrick Siska, our Patriots super fan, along the way. And then today, a little bit later on, I'll be talking with a gentleman, DJ Mies, from the Patriots Beat podcast, talk about the Patriots offseason. But that's for later on in the show. Let's bring in some of our other super fans. Neil is our Redskins super fan from Scotland. He's here usually every Thursday. Hello, Neil.
Hey, Jay, how you doing? I'm hoping that by the end of the show today, I will all be able to agree that the NFC East is not the worst division in football. And if I can just add one thing, where's Greg? He's usually here on a Thursday. Is it this week? Is his turn to be watering the cannabis plants in the Pittsburgh factory?
I'm surprised you decided to take the shot at Greg, who is not with us this week. And instead turn your attention to, your European mate. It's Australian Simon in England, our Cincinnati Bengals super fan. Hello, Simon. It's been a while.
Hey, Pat, how you doing? The reason Greg's not here is because he was representing the AFC North, and that's the champions of the AFC North. Obviously, the big dogs back in town. So, looking forward to chatting with you guys. Looking forward to showcasing that England is better than Scotland, and the AFC North is the best division in football.
I love the way we can bring all the countries of the world together on this show. It's fantastic. Heading out to the west coast of the United States of America, it's Justin, our Seahawks superfan, also a regular on Thursday. Sorry it took me a while to get to you, Justin. We're a little crowded today.
Oh, it's a big list. That's not a problem. I'm just excited to talk about the best team in the best division in football. Also looking forward to talking about some old man free agents that might be able to help us make a championship push.
Yes, we're going to be getting into the best available free agents and talking about what they can lend to teams out there. There's still some teams that have some holes to fill, and there are some free agents that can certainly fill those holes. So we're going to be getting into that a little bit later. And finally, it is our guy representing the Chicago Bears. It's Tom. Hi, Tom. It's been a while since I've spoken with you, too.
How are you, sir? It is little known, but although I am a Bears fan, my original hometown is St. Louis, and I am very glad to see that they got an expansion team last week.
They did?
They did. Of course, it's not your typical expansion team. The average age might be just a tad older than than the usual expansion. The upside, let's say, may be limited, although the quality of play, I would say, would match it.
Tom is, of course, referring to the article which will generate a lot of our conversation that was on NFL.com and written by Dan Hansis. about the 2016 Greybeards, and those are that's a team of the best available free agents remaining. And so let's jump right into it here, gentlemen. We'll start at the quarterback position. And Ryan Fitzpatrick is still out there. He has not come to an agreement with the Jets yet. I believe overall he probably will. The Broncos are still looking for a guy. Dan here has Charlie Whitehurst listed as the next quarterback. By the way, that's a huge drop off from Fitzpatrick to Whitehurst, in my opinion. But what I really want to talk about when it comes to the quarterbacks is you kind of have to include Colin Kaepernick in this conversation. And the guy who has the most experience with Colin Kaepernick here would be you, Justin. What are your thoughts there? Is Colin Kaepernick better than Ryan Fitzpatrick, who we'll just assume is arguably the best remaining available quarterback?
No, he's not. That's a situation where the physical tools, night and day difference. I mean, when Colin Kaepernick throws a football, the thing comes out at 90 miles an hour. Problem is, quarterback is not a position where it's all about your athleticism. He can't make reads. He doesn't have any touch. Everything is a kind of line drive at 90 miles per hour. Ryan Fitzpatrick can play the position like a quarterback's supposed to, with nuance, making reads, making checks, making decisions. There's a huge, huge gap between the two of those guys.
I leave the floor open to debate.
As someone who's had Ryan Fitzpatrick on their team for a couple of years and decided to give him a 5-year contract, he will come up terrible at the worst possible time. Last year in the Jets game, or the Jets played the Bills, that the Jets won. I believe they were in the playoffs. He threw three interceptions in the second half of the game. He will make you think that he's pretty good, and then he will rip your heart out at the worst possible time.
Well, I got to tell you, if it's a choice between a guy that'll rip my heart out at the worst possible time and a guy that'll rip my heart out every single week, like Geno Smith, I think I'll take Fitzpatrick. If I was the Jets, I'd give this guy a year, give him a decent amount of money, and pick a quarterback and develop somebody behind him. That's if you don't like Bryce Petty, who, by the way, is still sitting there. I believe they took him in the third round. So it's not impossible that they may be developing him to take over as well. But in any case, I think the Jets are playing with fire here. I think they should, for 1 year, they can give the guy the money that he wants, starter money. And that's what I would do. He's the only legitimate starter left, in my opinion.
Yeah, he's won championships with worse quarterbacks than Ryan Fitzpatrick.
I still think the move is to try and get Colin Kaepernick here. And I do think Kaepernick's price tag right now is at $14 million. I did see a tweet, I believe it came from Adam Schefter, that the Broncos are asking him to take a $7 million pay cut. Again, the price tag was set early by Brock Osweiler and that transition tag. And if teams aren't going to accept what the transition tag is set at, I think teams are sort of fooling themselves. I think the market has been set. Teams need to, you know, sort of wake up, or they're going to end up getting stuck, as we mentioned, with Geno Smith as the starting quarterback of the New York Jets. And that's just going to ruin the overall division power rankings, in my opinion.
I think that in the Browns case, before they signed RG3, the problem wasn't the money, it was the compensation. And I have to tell you, I don't blame them. I wouldn't want to give a second round pick for Colin Kaepernick right now. That's a pretty big risk for, you know, I think more compensation than he's really worth. I'm a little surprised that the Broncos are willing to give that, and that the issue is money, but I don't think that's all. I think it's a combination of money and compensation to the 49ers. And it's a lot to give up for a guy that you're really not sure if he's going to remember how to play quarterback or not. I mean, he certainly did forget for a year.
All right, let's move on to the running back position. According to this article, again, NFL.com, the 2016 Greybeards, the best available running back fullbacks are Arian Foster, LeGarrette Blount, and John Kuhn. Now, Foster, I can understand why he's still available.
I wouldn't touch Arian Foster with a 10-foot pole. I certainly wouldn't give him a lot of money to come run the football for my team. LeGarrette Blount is 29, so he's getting close to that magic age of 30, which Arian Foster, by the way, is at, on top of the injury issues Foster carries with him. And John Kuhn here, listed as the third guy, I think is more of a fullback position so that he could, you know, the writer of this article could sort of fill out a team with guys. I mean, Kuhn isn't necessarily going to make or break a team, but he's definitely a great contributor at that fullback position.
Yeah, I'm not really sure why LeGarrette Blount is still available. I think he can bring some quality to a team in need of a running back. His skill set's limited, but in terms of what he does, he's pretty good, and he's still 29. I mean, it isn't like John Kuhn, who's 34, or even Foster, who's coming off of an injury. You know, I don't really know what LeGarrette Blount is like behind the scenes, but it could be that maybe he's not the greatest guy in the locker room. And, you know, that's just pure speculation. I really don't know. And other than that, you know, the only thing I can think of is maybe he's just not getting the money in terms of an offer that he thinks he should have gotten. I mean, the first wave of free agency is over. And I think with a lot of these guys, especially the younger guys, maybe they're on this list because they were waiting to get a big payday and it didn't come their way. I wonder if Blount's not like that.
I would absolutely love to bring Arian Foster to Seattle, sign him to a deal similar to what we gave to Fred Jackson last year. We've got a really good young couple of running backs. Now they're one that really fits that third back mold, the guy who is smart, who you trust in things like pass protection, and who can catch the ball really well. And with the exception of maybe Jamaal Charles, nowadays there's no running back in the league who, when healthy, is a better receiver than Arian Foster. To me, he's a perfect fit here because I think if you limit his touches, you can get him through the entire year, and the touches he does get will be very, very, very productive. There's probably nobody on this list I want to have more than Arian Foster.
I guess the Dolphins are interested in him too. As far as I know, that's the only team he's really visited. And I guess that's a typical Mike Tannenbaum type of move. Pick the flashiest name left on the shelf, no matter, you know, what the situation is. I always see him as being kind of the kind of guy that's going to pull that. It's a very Tannenbaum-y type of move. I don't know. Coming off of an Achilles injury, it's really hard to figure out how much he's going to have left. I would certainly want to wait and see before I did anything there. That's for sure. If he's three quarters of the back he used to be, then he can be useful to somebody, but he may not even be that anymore. It'll be interesting to see.
Foster and Blount might both be training camp pickups. You know, when teams start getting injuries, they'll have a chance to prove their health and probably both get picked up then. I like Foster. He's a great player.
I ultimately think Blount will end up back with the Patriots. It's just a matter of him finding out what his true free agent value is worth. I think he knows what it is now, and I think the Patriots will give him his true value. I don't think they'll get him at a discount, but they'll end up signing him at what will be fair to both him and the team. The wide receiver position, we've got Anquan Boldin, who's 35, Percy Harvin, who's 28, James Jones, who's 32, Andre Johnson, who's 35. I don't want any of these wide receivers. I don't know if any of these guys could offer anything to any team.
Percy Harvin's a funny guy. You know, you see the talent there. He's one of the most talented receivers / return men we've seen in the last number of years. So if he could just get himself healthy and keep his head on straight, he'd be a good pickup.
Percy Harvin last year, he played with the Bills the first couple of games and he played fairly well. But he got injured and he just randomly kind of like disappeared from the team. No one really was saying anything about it. It seemed like kind of a weird situation. And it seems like he has a lot of those. Like, I know in Minnesota, he had some sort of, you know, run-ins and issues. I don't know exactly. And obviously in Seattle, you know, he got released or ended up with the Jets based on some weird stuff. So, I don't know. I know I saw a report from someone I think Pro Football Talk saying that he's got suitors and he's looking to play this year, but I don't know. I'm not interested in him. I don't think it's good. I mean, for a culture of a team to have someone who's gets in all those weird kind of shenanigans with the rest of the team.
Yeah, Harvin was in Minnesota for a long time. They drafted him. His problem there, if I remember right, was migraine headaches. And it was very annoying because you never quite knew when it was going to pop up. I think he solved those issues, but he's still on the field. He's an interesting guy. He's got all this physical ability, and every once in a while he flashes and he really makes you, he makes your eyes open. But he's not very consistent. And, you know, when he went to Seattle, the league made a big deal out of it, and I sat there and thought, you know, the Bears play Minnesota twice a year, and I can't remember one single time when they played them, and I thought, boy, the one guy they have to stop is Percy Harvin. You know, I don't think he's ever really achieved his potential, and I think maybe Seattle and Minnesota both figured out that it just wasn't going to happen. But I guess guys like that always have coaches who think they can get it out of them. And maybe that's why, as you said, he's got suitors. You know, somebody, some coach out there thinks that this is the lump of clay that I'm going to mold into the masterpiece of my coaching career or something like that. There's always somebody who thinks that they can get something out of them that nobody else got. And all you need is the physical tools. And that's probably why there's still interest in him.
As we mesh articles that we've been looking at over the past week or so, ESPN.com has a list of the biggest holes remaining on all 32 NFL teams. And Simon, wide receiver, is listed as the Bengals' biggest hole at this particular point. You ended up signing a Patriot castoff Brandon LaFell. So good luck with that. Any of these wide receivers interest you?
No, not until after the draft. I mean, I've always liked Anquan Boldin just for his sheer competitiveness, and he's been phenomenal in the playoffs, both the Ravens and the 49ers in years gone past. But I think we need to see where we get to in the draft, and then the market might open up for a lot of these players, really. He might just be taking the time off to get their bodies right. You know, you look like an Arian Foster, getting your body right, and then assess it around training camp and saying, right, who's the right team for me to get a ring? You know, at this part of their careers, that's what they really only care about. The money is one thing, but getting a chance to win a game and to get a ring, I think, is the reason why these guys are there. So we'll see after the draft, and then we'll go from there, I guess.
Tight end. When this article was written, Vernon Davis was still available. I heard rumors he got signed somewhere. Can someone confirm that for me?
I saw a couple things about Washington today.
Yes, Vernon Davis signed a one-year deal with Washington today, or yesterday, I think, or last night. Probably coming in as a blocking tight end for us behind Niles Paul and Jordan Reed. He was drafted by our GM, Scott McLuhan, I think back in, what was it, 2006? So, yeah, we'll see what he can do. He did nothing, I think, last year, did he? But you never know.
No. Owen Daniels is the other tight end listed as the best available in free agency at this particular point. Both those guys are on the plus side of 32. I'm not going to spend a lot of time here on either of these two guys, unless somebody here wants to raise their hand for Owen Daniels. Didn't think so. Moving now to the offensive line. And again, the object of this article that we're working off of was to make a team full of the best available guys. At right tackle, we have Luis Vasquez, right guard Jahari Evans, center Stefan Wisniewski, left guard Ben Grubbs, left tackle Jake Long. Again, with these so many injury issues involved with some of these guys, but Wisniewski at center and Vasquez at right tackle, they're both under 30. Wisniewski's 27. Vasquez is 29. I mean, honestly, at this point, I mean, these guys can probably help somebody. And I'm looking at you, New England, as sort of stopgap depth type of guys. Who else has got some offensive line issues here? Anybody?
Everybody. Most of the league. I'm really
nobody more so than the Seahawks. I promise you that.
I'm really surprised Wisniewski is still on this list. I would have thought that he would at minimum be quality depth. And this may be another one of those situations where he's waiting for more money and it's not going to come. Because other than that, unless somebody else has seen something that I missed, he looks like a starter quality center to me. He's not Pro Bowl, but I think if I had a poor interior of the offensive line, and there are a lot of really, really bad offensive lines out there, I think I'd want this guy on my team.
There's a real dearth of offensive line talent across the league. I think you're right. It seems to be getting worse and worse. I think Wisniewski is a little bit undersized. No, that's his issue. The interesting one on that list, Jay, for me, is Jake Long. What an outstanding player he was. And you look at him, he's only 31 years old. You'd expect him to have played a lot longer, but I guess just injuries.
Yeah, Long sat on the Falcons roster all year last year. I think he barely played, so there may be some sort of an issue there. You know, I don't know. Maybe he's just not as good as his name would suggest. You know, he's a high draft pick, but I don't know how many games he started, but it couldn't have been very many because I think he barely got off the bench last year.
Yeah, was he number one overall?
Yeah, he only played four games last year, and as far as I know, he was healthy.
Yeah, Long was a number one overall. Justin, you raised your hand as having the biggest hole on the offensive line. What do you think of these guys?
Honestly, with the exception of Jake Long, who I just don't think can play anymore, I would take the entire group with where my team is at. I mean, our best players are at best borderline starting caliber linemen, and that's just a couple of guys. Vasquez, I think, is a legitimate tackle. Jari Evans has played some really, really good guard, so those two especially. Right now, I look at the Seahawks roster, and I'm comfortable with pretty much every single position. I think they're all built, if not completely stacked, with the exception of the offensive line, where it's holes on top of holes on top of holes. I promise you the way the first five you see at the start of training camp is going to be different from the first five you see during the preseason, which is going to be different from what you see week one, which will be different from what you see week five. I can guarantee it because this is just such a mishmash of, I don't even want to say talent, of big bodies.
All right, moving to the defensive side of the ball here. Neil, this ESPN article says a big hole for the Washington Redskins is a defensive tackle. And as we look at the interior line, I see Jason Hatcher, Terrence Knighton, who visited the Patriots just recently, Mike DeVito, and Henry Melton. What are your thoughts there on the D-tackles?
Well, of course, Hatcher and Knighton have been Redskins for the last few, for the last 2 or 3 years, Knighton last year. Was Knighton just visiting New England for lunch, or his problem has been keeping his weight down?
I don't think he was just visiting for lunch, and I don't think the Patriots would have a problem with his large size, considering the way that they want a giant nose tackle to fill the space.
In terms of Hatcher, he's just coming to the end. I mean, he still flashes outstanding ability at times, but it's just becoming all too infrequent. And again, injuries have slowed him, but he is a, well, you know, borderline Hall of Fame player.
No, he's not.
That was perfect. Perfect timing. Let's talk about some of the pass rushers that are available still. Alden Smith. Yeah, I don't think anyone's going to take a risk on Alden Smith. Dwight Freeney, he's 36 now. Corey Bierman is an interesting one that's still available. I liken him to a Rob Ninkovich, who I liken to a Mike Vrabel type of player. I think Bierman is a guy that, you know, is that lunch pail type of guy. He's not going to get you a lot of the big sexy stats, but he's going to plug some holes for you and make your defense kind of strong.
I like Croy. He was actually in Buffalo on Tuesday for a visit. It was his first visit of the offseason. I know for us, a big need is outside linebacker in that 3-4, where he would fit pretty well.
Yeah, the Bears have a need at pass rusher like a lot of other teams. they're not going to be interested in Dwight Freeney because he's 36 and they want guys under 30. Bierman's an interesting name. My problem with him is that the Bears already...
Because it has beer in it?
And that I kind of like. It depends on what kind of beer, of course. The problem is that they have guys like him already on the roster, guys that'll get you anywhere from 2 to 6 sacks in a year. What they need is a speed guy off of the edge, and I don't think that he really fills that hole. He's kind of, like you said, he's lunch pail. He's kind of a middle of the road, sort of like plug a hole solid starter, but not anything really great. And given that he's 30, I don't know, you know, maybe that's why there isn't quite so much interest in him at the moment as usual, but there are enough teams that need pass rush. Somebody will sign him. I just don't think it'll be the Bears.
I certainly wouldn't mind taking a flyer on Alden Smith. I think you can get him with a one-year deal to kind of approve it, which he did, I think, last year. And at least looking at the Seahawks roster, you know, if he doesn't pan out, they're not going to be afraid to just jettison him because there's plenty going on. I've spoken at length about how I really, really want, you know, see a strong need for that rotation on the defensive line, especially amongst pass rushers. So even a guy like Corey Bierman, who maybe isn't a top-tier talent, if he can be productive for a couple of downs in a series and spell the guys who are top-tier talent, then you're better on almost every play on every drive. I think that's incredibly valuable and so understated in the league today. And Dwight Freeney, he's old, but the downs he played last year for Arizona, which was just passing downs, he was still a wrecking machine. I mean, that spin move is still as deadly as ever. He's still fast. He still has great technique. I think all three of these players have a lot to offer, and at least Freeney and Bierman, I think, will almost certainly be on a team once the season starts.
I can't see how Freeney, maybe Bierman, I can't see how he's not on a team. Just from a special teams perspective, he's going to end up signing somewhere. Let's move to the linebacker position. And I like a bunch of these guys on this list. At inside linebacker, Carlos Dansby, who is 34, but I think he's still got a lot to show. D'Amico Ryans at 32. I would honestly, I mean, linebacker is a position that I apparently am the only Patriots fan on the face of the planet that still feels that the Pats need to work on their linebacker depth. I would love to see D'Amico Ryans up in New England. Donald Butler is at 27 at outside linebacker. We've got Zach Brown and Justin Durant. You know, I think all of these guys still have something to contribute. Robert, you are a team, according to the ESPN article, that linebacker would be something you'd be interested in.
Yeah, our linebackers are a dumpster fire. Right now we're starting a free agent pickup from the draft last year that we cut in the middle of the season. He's one of our starters. So, yeah, honestly, any of these, Dansby's gone. I think he went to Cincinnati.
Yes.
I would – D'Amico Ryans, I mean, he's a little older, but I don't care. Bring him on. I would take Zach Brown. That's someone who I thought would have been picked up. I'm kind of surprised that he's not. Maybe I don't know as much about him as other people do, but I'm surprised that he's not someone who isn't already picked up, to be honest.
Simon, talk to me about Carlos Dansby since you ended up getting him.
Yeah, no, I think it was a couple of things really at play here. It's obviously a really good coverage linebacker, and that's something our linebacker core is terrible at. And also with the uncertainty of Vontaze Burfict, the 3 games suspended, I think just adding another veteran to that mix is something we'll do. But it's quite interesting because there's a bit of a logjam now at linebacker. We re-signed the new A. We still got AJ Hawk, who didn't do a great deal last year. PJ Dawson, the rookie from last year, I think is a really good talent. And then obviously got Vontaze, Ray Mauluga, and some other guys that you won't know, but Marquise Flowers, Trevor Roach, and Jason DeMunch still on the roster. So it's a really sort of full room for new coordinator Scott Linehan. That's good. Linehan. He's a guy from Washington. Neil, help me out. He was just fired last year, but he's our new linebackers coach anyway. And I think it's quite an interesting room. It's veteran heavy. It's not very athletic, but hopefully Danza gives us a bit more athleticism, even at 34.
Don't go far, Simon, because as we talk about the defensive backs available, Leon Hall and Reggie Nelson, Leon Hall at corner, Reggie Nelson at safety are two guys still available. Reggie Nelson's a guy that I'm surprised is still available. Talk to me about those two guys. Why are they not back in Cincinnati?
Well, Reggie was offered a deal and he turned it down, and I think he felt he could get a better deal elsewhere. The same thing, he got a deal in Minnesota, but they signed somebody else. And also Tennessee were interested but didn't make an offer. There's been thought that he might come back. We'll see. Again, we re-signed George Iloka. We have Sean Williams, you know, coming up, and also Deron Smith. But he's a guy that has always contributed. It was great last year in terms of picks. He missed a few tackles, but he's a great leader, great safety, even for his age. And I imagine he'll come back, you know, just after the draft of the team. Leon Hall has been phenomenal for us, but the one problem that he had was he had two Achilles injuries that wiped out basically two seasons for him. And at 31, he's quite an old 31. He got burned a few times by Antonio Brown, which is obviously no negative thing because that's a lot of players. But I think age of finally caught up with Leon Hall. I don't imagine him coming back unless it was a one-year vet minimum deal. But I think two guys who offer you leadership and who are really good football players. So I hope they end up in the NFC, and I hope they end up with contenders as well, because they're two great guys for us who have contributed for a number of years.
We've got Antonio Cromartie, who's on this list. Honestly, I don't know why anyone would want Antonio Cromartie on their team. Charles Tillman's at 35 and coming off a torn ACL. I think that's a tough place to be as a cornerback. Deshaun Goldson and Roman Harper, safeties. Again, Roman Harper, as the author here admits, a.k.a. Mr. Salt and Pepper, was destined to one day be a graybeard. Deshaun Goldson, he's 31. He's another safety that I think could contribute. And obviously, when we're talking about Tillman, maybe making the transition from corner to safety, which we've seen many corners do towards the end of their career, maybe that's a position that he could take on. Chicago, you know Peanut Tillman well. Talk to me about Charles Tillman.
Yeah, every year somebody asked the question about whether Charles Tillman was going to move to safety. And he consistently said that he didn't want to do it, and the team consistently said they had no plans to let him do it. And nevertheless, it continued to come up because of his size and his mobility and the fact that they were constantly in need of safeties. Unfortunately, coming off an ACL at 35, I can't see him making a roster. I think he belongs coaching, to tell you the truth, and that if he's willing to make the sacrifice, that's probably where he belongs. He was a wonderful influence on virtually every player on the team, especially the defensive backs, as far as I could tell. Class guy, hate to see him go, but the combination of age and that injury and trying to come back from that, I just can't imagine that anyone will sign him, even as a safety.
You know, my one fear with Antonio Cromartie is I'm pretty sure he has something like 5,000 children, and he's getting old, so he's going to be having just a billion grandkids here shortly, I'm sure. His focus might be divided.
Oh, that's well done. That's well done. I'm just going to briefly mention the specialists that are listed here at kicker, Greg Zuerlein. Interesting that he's available. However, last year, only a 66.6% field goal conversion rate. Steve Weatherford, the punter, is 33. But again, he's a pretty good punter, and I can't comment on long snappers. I have no idea, but Brett Good is listed as someone who's available in this article. So those are your best available free agents. Hope you enjoyed that conversation. Let's move now to this other article from NFL.com talking about the 2016 NFL division power rankings, and the number one division in football, according to this article, is the AFC North. Simon, defend yourself, because honestly, I do not see the AFC North as the number one division in football.
I don't know what the issue is. We've got two Super Bowl winning quarterbacks. We've got Andy Dalton, who was an MVP candidate until he got injured, I'd imagine. And we've got the offensive rookie of the year, Robert Griffin III, now in the division. You know, we've got it all made. We've been to the playoffs. We've had multiple teams in the playoffs for the last two or three seasons.
We play good football across the board, not just offense, defense. I mean, the Browns obviously make us a little bit of an issue, but under Hugh Jackson, I imagine him to be a much tougher opponent for anybody next year. And look at all the other divisions. I'm not sure from 1-4 is a stronger four.
I think the Ravens pull you down a little bit too. Justin, in the tease, you had mentioned the NFC West is the best. Why do you think so?
It's all about the top two. I think Arizona and Seattle, either one of them is honestly better than any team in the AFC North. And I think that really matters.
It's not about the top two. It's the best division of all teams.
That's
you've
true.
Got Blaine Gabbert, Chase Keenum. I mean, I'll just leave it there.
Yeah, and you have Cleveland. You could have the last three Super Bowl winners, but you have Cleveland. Okay, so you should drop on the list just for having Cleveland.
You are obviously not looking at the analytics. Paul D. Podesta could
that some kind of spreadsheet wizardry is going on.
I'm gonna hang up now.
And Simon, I'm not saying this to be mean to you, but I think your Bengals are going to take a big step back. I think you've lost too much of the wide receiver position. I think Andy Dalton had the best year he will ever have in his career. I think that's kind of like
we lost like five
Patrick had in Buffalo.
We've lost like five touchdowns from those two guys. I get where you're coming from, but AJ Green's still there. Tyler Eifert's still there. You know, Dalton came on a lot last year, and the defense will be stronger next season.
And, you know, I think we've seen the best of AJ Green. I will say that a reason why I think the AFC North is a top division, though, is even though they were really, really bad last year, I do think the Ravens are a legitimate Super Bowl contender this year. I think they're an excellent team who got bit worse by the injury bug than anybody could possibly imagine. Just giving them higher picks than we're used to them having, I think they're going to be a legit titled contender. I think the Steelers will as well. I think the Bengals will be good. But I still think the Hawks and the Cardinals are better than any of those teams. I think the Rams will be 8-8 because Jeff Fisher is always 8-8, no exception. And our dumpster fire, I think, is just a little better than your dumpster fire. I think the Niners are still just a little ahead of Cleveland, even though they're both just raging garbage monsters.
Let's let some other guys jump into this debate and bring in the NFC North, Tom in Chicago. And I'll add, to try and help Tom get fired up here on this, you know, Justin, you mentioned that the Browns way down the AFC North, but I do think that the LA Rams of St. Louis way down the NFC West a little bit as well. Tom, go for it.
You could make a case that the NFC North belongs higher on this list. I think it's at five. And certainly, I think there is every reason to believe that Green Bay can turn things around. That was really, I mean, even as a Bears fan, I would have to say that was an abnormality there. And I can't believe that with that coaching staff and that quarterback that they're going to stay down for very long. Minnesota has been on the rise. Pod, you may remember we did the preseason podcast for the NFC North, the preview last year. I was sky high on the Vikings. Not quite as high on them now because I don't like their offensive line. But, hey, they won the division last year, and there's every reason to believe that they'll be able to compete with virtually anyone, really, in the NFC on any given Sunday. The Lions are getting better. I kind of like what they did with their front office this year, and I think that's going to show. And I think they had a down year last year. And so there's three quality teams for you there. And I'll tell you what, the Bears are probably still a year away from really contending. But if they got lucky and they stayed healthy, they could have a reasonably decent year. We don't have any Browns in our division, and we don't have the San Francisco 49ers. I think we have four teams that can compete with anyone in any given week. They have a reasonable chance of winning. There won't be a whole lot of double-digit spreads when you play an NFC North team. So I'll go to bat for my division on the basis of consistency. And maybe that's not the greatest defense in the world, but overall, you know, I think if you put it all together, you can make a case that they belong at least higher than where they are.
The South divisions have some interesting quarterbacks in sort of development. You look at the AFC South, Osweiler, both those Myers, there's some really good young quarterbacks there. And then the NFC South got Cam Newton, Matt Ryan, Drew Brees, and Jameis Winston. Four really nice quarterbacks in each division. So maybe two divisions on the rise there within these rankings.
Yeah, you know what? The AFC South might surprise a lot of people this year. That's all I'll say. I kind of like the direction that Jacksonville's headed in. And I think you're right. I don't think they belong at the bottom of that list anywhere close. I hate to be agreeable, but...
Well, I hate to be disagreeable. When I ranked them 1-8, I had the AFC South as number 8. I just don't really see it from... I think we can become too focused on just the quarterbacks in the division. I think it's much more than that. And I don't see any of those teams really doing much this year. In terms of the big battle between the NFC West and the AFC North, I look at the worst teams in the division, and I think I would take the 49ers and the Rams rosters over the Ravens and Browns. I think the Ravens are in for a big shock. I think they're going to be picking even higher next year. And the Browns, well, it's the Browns. So actually, my number one team was the NFC West. I think with Arizona and Seattle, the rosters that are there with the Rams, I think that's really hard to beat. I think they're terrific.
I really worry about Seattle's offensive line, and maybe that's not justified. They did a little better in the second half of the year. But, man, you know, as much talent as that team has, I don't know. Just like last year, I went into the year just kind of having a hard time believing that they were going to be that good. Sorry, Justin, but I wonder if we're not overrating them.
You are not.
Okay.
I think it's clear that there's no offensive line to worry about because there isn't an offensive line there. I think Justin was quite clear.
Yeah, I could set up a bunch of pylons and say they were there. That might work.
I mean, Jay, I have to take issue with this list because my division is right at the bottom. I mean, and that's just ridiculous. I think we've got four teams there who are all potentially going to be better this coming season.
No.
And I think they're probably at the bottom because they're four very evenly matched teams, and no great team and no really, really bad team. Just four kind of fairly evenly matched teams. I think it's a much better. They're fifth in my ranking.
Four below average teams. They are.
Yeah.
What was Washington's record when they won that division last year?
Yeah, you were breaking up there, Tom. Sorry, I didn't hear you.
I said I think there are four below average teams, and I wanted to know what Washington's record was when they won that division last year.
We had a winning record last year.
Oh, well, there you go. I'm
the NFC least, I believe, is rightfully where it belongs at position number 8.
No.
I will say the AFC least is a little bit higher on this list than I think they belong. I do think the NFC North and the NFC South are definitely better than the AFC least. And Robert, I would attribute pretty much any of the other teams that are not named the Patriots as bringing this division down.
That's fair. It's fair. Obviously that division has been real top heavy with the Patriots owning it for, you know, quite a long time now. And, you know, the other three teams just trying to build to beat the Patriots and just being futile. I kind of like I think the NFC West, in my opinion, just because, I mean, the two top teams are just so good. On the short list for a Super Bowl, both of those teams are on it. I like the AFC West, though, as far as just kind of top to bottom. I think San Diego was kind of an aberration last year. They got Wisenhunt back as their offensive coordinator. So I think their offense is going to be a lot better than it was the year before. And Oakland is just spending all that money that they haven't spent for the past that they had to spend this year. And they have a couple of real nice young pieces. So I think that division is going to be a real – might not be the best division, but I think it's might be number two. I think it's going to be a real fun division to watch this year.
Yeah, I had the AFC West as number two when I ranked them.
I think whoever takes last place in the AFC West could probably win the AFC South or the NFC East. I think that's how good that division is across the board.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, did you just say the last place team in the West would win first place in the AFC East?
No, South and NFC East.
All right, thank you. I was gonna cut you from your job as a super fan.
I'm not trying to get your Darth Vader themed tidy whities in a twist.
My goodness. The AFC West. Let's spend a quick moment here on the AFC West here, because I don't believe in the Broncos, the defending champions. I believe they're coming. They're heading for a real giant fall. I do believe the Chiefs are probably the best team in that division. Although those guys who look really pretty, those Oakland Raiders, I really do like the Oakland Raiders as we head into this season. The San Diego Chargers are a tough one. I hear what you were saying earlier about, you know, they could be coming back, but there's a lot of coulds and woulds in there. And I think the AFC West is ranked a little bit too high on this list as well.
Best quarterback in the division in San Diego, in that division. I like them.
Well, let's talk about the best quarterback in football, perhaps in history. His name is Tom Brady. I'm going to spend a little bit of time right now and talk to a good friend of mine over at the Patriots Beat podcast. You guys can take a breather here while I get into talking about the New England Patriots offseason. All right, everybody. It's my pleasure now to bring in our special guest. He is known as DJ Mees. He's one of the co-hosts of Patriots Beat, part of the CLNS network, CLNS. You want to make sure you say that very appropriately. You want to get all those letters in there. That is definitely part of, yeah, as part of Blog Talk Radio. You can also listen to these podcasts on iTunes. DJ Mees, how are you?
I'm good, man. I'm excited to talk some Patriots. Thank you for having me.
Well, thanks for joining me. You know, oftentimes people accuse me of making the show Patriots Today. Perhaps I am trying to do that in my own underhanded ways. But we do like to focus on all 32 teams. But I wanted to bring you on to specifically talk about the Patriots, because this offseason seems to be the typical type of offseason the Patriots do. It's been a little different in that they've made some trades, which I think is made up for some of them. Yeah, made up for some of the moves that they typically make that they haven't made yet, or maybe they're not planning on making, who knows. But ultimately, I think the end result at this point of free agency is a typical Patriots offseason.
I would say it's a little, I wouldn't call this one typical. I think it started off as a typical offseason with the Patriots not making a move the first day. And, you know, Patriots fans really started off a little nervous. But then we started making, you know, a little noise and getting Chris Hogan. Then we made a splash when we traded Chandler Jones. And we got second round pick for that. And then also you make the move in getting Martellus Bennett. So I think it was more than a typical offseason for the Patriots this year.
Well, I think the impact moves of those trades are really what are going to be the focus of this offseason at this point. I'm not a big believer in Chris Hogan. We'll have to wait and see what he can actually provide. That move, you know, definitely looks like one that the Patriots tend to do every offseason. The one move that I don't like the Patriots have done so far, and you mentioned it, and that was the trading of Chandler Jones. I understand it. I get the whole background as to why they needed to make the move. But for me, as a Patriots fan, and I should be used to this by now, but they tend not to keep their superstars. They let their superstars leave or trade away unless they're go by the name of Tom Brady. And that's sort of what I didn't enjoy about that trade. But otherwise, I seem to understand some of the other moves. Do you sort of understand the Patriots moves?
So I was like you. When they first made the trade to get rid of Chandler Jones, I said, whoa, what is going on here? And I was very shocked. But when I started to think of think about it more. And, you know, you started hearing the reports. You have Hightower. You have Collins. You still got to pay Butler as well. Someone was going to be the odd man out. And out of all of them, if it was going to be Chandler Jones, once you start thinking about it, I'm not too upset. And another reason why I'm not so upset is because we have Jabal Sheard. I've been big on that signing since last year, bringing Jabal Sheard in. He really came up big at the end of the year. He started even taking reps away from Chandler Jones. And I think he's going to be the perfect replacement. And production won't change as much. That's my take on the Chandler Jones trade.
Yeah, I think the depth the Patriots have at the defensive line is tremendous. I think that's why we've seen some of the players that have left. You know, Akeem Hicks, who was one of our top free agents, I guess you could say, ends up leaving and going to Chicago. But it ultimately, I ultimately don't see a huge hit there. And as you acquire a second round pick for Chandler Jones, we've heard all along about this draft class coming up. That defensive tackle class is deep. And so I do expect to see some defensive tackle taken by the Patriots within their first few picks.
And speaking of defensive tackle, the rumor is that we might really get Terrence Knight in from the Redskins. He came to, you know, work out with the Patriots recently, and they might be assigning there as well. So we're still going to get even deeper.
I mean, having Pot Roast on the team would be fantastic, on top of the fact that it's so appropriate in New England.
That's very true. That's very, very true. I don't think they're going to give Pot Roast the money he's going to be expecting, but we'll see how that works.
Well, I think at this stage of free agency, if you're a free agent, you can't expect the money that you are expecting, at least initially. It's time to start thinking about negotiating down. Although, in some instances, like Ryan Fitzpatrick, as we discussed earlier on this podcast with the superfans, you know, I don't think Fitzpatrick needs to take as big a pay cut as the Jets would like him to take.
Very, very true. And Fitzpatrick has, you know, he proved himself this year. I don't think he's going to get as much money as he's going to expect, but he definitely proved himself as being, you know, a solid quarterback in this league.
Let's talk a little bit about that Bennett trade, because, I mean, immediately thoughts jump to the good old days, which weren't even that old, of Gronk and Hernandez, you know, tearing it up on the field. And now the Patriots signed Clay Harbor at tight end. Once again, the Patriots just acquiring a giant amount of talent at the tight end position.
Yeah. Yeah. So on Bennett, I'm very, very excited about this trade. When it comes to another, like you said, Aaron Hernandez, it definitely brings up some similarities. Don't expect Bennett to be like Hernandez, but he's another big body. He'll be definitely a better than Scott Chandler or Tim Wright or who, man. He's definitely an upgrade from there. And he gives Gronk some leeway now, because now you can't double team Gronk, and gives Brady another weapon to throw in the red zone.
I'm loving this three tight end set the Patriots run out there quite often. But even beyond the three tight end set, it does give a chance to sort of rest, you know, Gronk at times. You don't have to rely so heavily on the Gronk man when you have, you know, three tight ends of the caliber that we're talking about here.
And Harbor is key, because he's very versatile as well. Not only can he play tight end, but he can play fullback. And, you know, Belichick loves versatility, and he played very well against us when he was in Jacksonville last year. And we all know, as New England Patriots fans, anytime a player plays well against us, we do whatever we can to try to pick him up. So I think he's going to be a huge fit for us. And he's going to be someone that, under the radar, teams are not going to be paying attention to, but can be a huge pickup for us.
So as we turn our eyes now to the draft, we have two late round second draft picks. Obviously, everyone knows we are missing that first round draft choice for what we would like to say bogus reasons. But for everyone else who listens to this show, we'll say that there were four reasons that the NFL deemed were necessary. That's about as far as I'll go on Deflategate. But as we look at the draft and we look at sort of where the Patriots' priorities should be, I mentioned I do expect them, just because of the value that people are talking about the defensive tackle class, that will end up adding someone at that position. But I'm curious where you think the Patriots really need to sort of focus on, considering the moves that they've made so far in free agency and what they currently have on the team.
I don't think they're going to go get a defensive tackle in their first two picks in the second round. I think they should. What they should do is go for a defensive back, someone that can, you know, an athletic defensive back to be alongside with Butler, and someone to help out our secondary and also an offensive line. We all know how last year ended. If we can get a young, good offensive tackle that can help us out in protecting Brady, I think that'll be key for our first two second-round picks, a defensive back and an offensive lineman.
I definitely hear you about the offensive line. I mean, we all know the offensive line woes the Patriots suffered last year. The cornerback position, I'm not that down on the corners. I mean, I definitely would love to add one if there's one there. The one position that I'm very concerned about, and I seem to be the only one amongst Patriots Nation, is linebacker. I'm very concerned about the depth currently at linebacker. I'm not a believer in Shea McClellan, who they signed. I know they have Dante Hightower and Jamie Collins, but to me, that's it. And as you mentioned, those two are heading towards free agency next year. Will the Patriots be able to keep both of them? That seems to be a position of worry on top of all the other free agents that are up for signing as well. I'm a little concerned at the linebacker position.
You bring up a good point, but I think Shane McClellan is going to be someone that's going to thrive in the Belichick system. He can play both 3-4, 4-3, switch it up a bit. And the way the Patriots are playing now, our defensive linemen are also acting as linebackers as well. And with the Hightower and Collins, I think the Patriots are, I hope, I mean, with the Patriots, never know, but I really hope the Patriots, you know, do whatever they can to lock up Hightower and Collins, because those are our cornerstones for our defense, pretty much. You need those two guys. I know they're going to do whatever. I know they're starting on Collins right now. They're going to do whatever they can to sign up Collins. But Hightower, in my opinion, he's like our quarterback to the defense. You know, he's taking the mayor role very well, and they're both going to be key. But definitely adding another linebacker in the draft would definitely help out our, you know, how deep our bench becomes.
I mean, honestly, when it comes to the Patriots at this particular point, I'm really more concerned about depth positions. I think they're fairly set in terms of starters. Other than that offensive line, I think there's still some improvement that could be made in those positions. But obviously depth is a concern at offensive line as well as at the starting position. Running back is another one that our super fan Patrick brought up to me. I'm not that concerned at the running back position. I think the depth there is fine. Yes, we don't have a big, I don't think we have a big banger, obviously, like LeGarrette Blount. But I do think LeGarrette will end up coming back to the Patriots as he's seen what his actual worth is now on the free agency market. I think the Patriots will be able to get him back, not necessarily at a discount, but at the right price for a back of that value. What are your thoughts at the running back position?
I agree. And like, I think Patriots fans, we forget, if Deion Lewis comes back from his ACL injury, 90% from what he was, we will be all right. Patriots don't need a heavy, heavy running game. You have LeGarrette Blount that can, you know, punch in it for 2-3 yards. That's all you need from him. James White has emerged from last year. You still have Brandon Bolden, who's a solid running back, and he helps out in special teams. And don't forget that guy, Joey Isofa, who came in when we were injury plagued, can help us out with the 1-2 yardage as well, when, you know, third down and shortage, fourth down and shortage. I think with the wide receivers we are acquiring right now, you have Deion Lewis and hopefully LeGarrette Blount comes back, we will be fine. We won't need to run it down the fields every down.
Well, and I think James Devlin, I believe, will be returning as well. The long forgotten sort of H-back guy who could play tight end and fullback as well. So I think, you know, the Patriots have options for the bigger back role. And I agree with you. I've always thought the Patriots should go with, you know, a core of running backs that were all Kevin Falk types. I think that would be a real interesting experiment for the Patriots to run. I don't think they're going to, but it'd be fun to see them run out with a running back core of just, you know, third down backs. Because out of that offense, they don't really need anybody like that.
And with Deion Lewis, he proved that he can be that Kevin Falk type pass catcher, and also he was able to run and get you 4 to 5 yards averaging. So he was such a huge, huge key for Tom Brady in the offense.
Awesome. DJ Mies, tell people where they can hear you, how they can find you, all that good stuff.
You can find me on Twitter at Measy Does It. That's MeezyDuzit. And, you know, follow us at CLNS Radio. Patriots beat on iTunes.
And by the way, CLNS cover, I got to remember to say that so staccatically, CLNS. I blend it all together and it comes out CLNS. CLNS.
Definitely. I do it too.
It stands for Celtics Live. They cover all the Boston teams, so you're going to want to follow them for your Celtics reports as the Celtics head into the NBA postseason. And the Bruins are still alive in the postseason, are they not? I'm not a big hockey fan.
The Bruins are fighting. They're fighting right now. They're fighting alive in the playoffs.
And, of course, the Red Sox season is about to start as well. So lots of good things happening for the Boston teams. And one of the biggest reasons why I had you on today, DJ Mies. Hope to have you back again sometime soon down the road.
Oh, definitely. This was fun. Thank you so much.
All right, there you go. There was my weekly attempt to turn this into Patriots Today. Clearly, I'm failing at it. But, you know, I do encourage everyone to, especially if you're a Celtics fan, to go check out the CLNS. See, I said it right that time. The CLNS network on Blog Talk Radio. All of their podcasts are available on iTunes, so you can follow the Celtics through the NBA playoffs. This is the NFL, though, and I need to say goodbye to my 5 super fans here. Thank you, gentlemen, for joining us today. Robert, before we go, this was your first show. How did it feel for you?
It was fun. It's, you know, literally I've never done anything like this before. So, definitely, something, that, I, you know, something that I wasn't terribly comfortable doing, but it was fun. I enjoyed it quite a bit. I'd like to do it again sometime.
By the way, Robert, became a super fan by emailing us at nextfanup@gmail.com. We filled all of our positions, and because all of our positions were filled, we have started the super fan super mock draft that's going on literally right this moment. Although it seems to be stalled right now in the Vikings. That's going on, and we'll have that broadcast for you a little bit later on in the month, maybe in the next couple of weeks. We'll present that to you in 2 parts. We'll go through every pick of the Superfan Super Mock Draft. Remember, our superfans are picking as if they were the GM of their team, so they're acting what they would like to see their team do, not what they think their team will do. So there's been trades. There's been quite a few trades. I believe there's been 2 already in this mock draft. So that'll be interesting for you all to hear. Also, please leave us a review on iTunes. You can download Next Fan Up on iTunes, just like Mel West did back on March of 26th. He said, "Super fans are super fun. Great group of guys and good topics. Always a good time." That's what we try to achieve here. Always a good time. And Neil, I think you helped contribute to that.
Oh, great. Tell him he checks in the post.
Excellent. Australian Simon, always good to hear from you, my friend.
Oh, absolutely. Pleasure as always. And it was good to be on with my fellow Brit as well, even though he's paid to play.
Fantastic. Thanks, Simon.
And Justin, your regular post here on Thursdays, thanks for joining us.
Absolutely happy to be here, Pod. I just want to throw one thing just into the ether off the cuff before we go. Cam Newton is better than Ben Roethlisberger. If you disagree, hit me up on Twitter. It's at Koreis, K-O-R-E-I-S.
Is that something you and Greg got going on right now?
It might be a side conversation we're having.
And Tom, always a pleasure to have you here on a Thursday show.
Well, thank you, sir. It's not very often I can make it, but I was happy to be here today.
Excellent. And so, as you all know, it's time for me to say, there you have it. Jeff Fisher, what do you have to say?
Well, I think we learned today that, this game is four quarters long.